This is called Talking John Birch Blues.
Back in the early 60s, New York's Greenwich Village seemed like the center of the world, or at least the center of the folk revival. The folk music scene was then the hub of bohemian culture and leftist politics, and Bob Dylan would become its biggest star.
I was feeling sad and kind of blue. I didn't know what I was gonna do. The communists was coming around. They was in the air, they was on the ground, they was all over.
Suze Rotolo met Dylan in 1961, and they soon became inseparable. Eventually they broke up, but Rotolo's remained a mythic figure in historical accounts of Dylan, often written about, but never heard from. Now she's written a memoir called A Freewheelin' Time. Anne Strainchamp spoke with Suze Rotolo.
Take me back to that period of time, in particular to New York, 1961. You met Bob Dylan at a folk concert, a kind of marathon all-day folk concert at Riverside Church. What was that first meeting like?
Well, I had already seen him perform. You know, there were a lot of musicians around in the different clubs and coffee houses, and he was around. He was one of many. He had a wonderful sense of humor, and he played with this other singer, Jack Elliott, and they were almost like a comedy act. And because I knew some of the musicians, I was backstage, and he was following me around a lot. It was kind of as if we knew each other already, but we had to get to know each other better.
I think at some point in your memoir you said, you know, you were both pretty sensitive, thin-skinned people, and that you found some kind of shelter in each other.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
Well, in a way that goes with young love. You know, you create this little world together. But I think both of us were highly sensitive. I say in the book that we didn't have skin growing over and nerve endings.
Hmm. Dylan at that point was a relative newcomer to New York, but you grew up there when you were a red diaper baby, right?
Yes, as the children of communists were known.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So you grew up with leftist politics, and also you grew up in New York. I mean, you loved music and art and theater and poetry, and you lived in a city full of museums. And it seems like right away you began kind of introducing all of that to Bob Dylan, who was, of course, this kid from Hibbing, Minnesota.
Yes, well, his focus was music, whereas mine was I was in different things. I was passionate about poetry, theater, art, and whatnot. And then you exchange, it's an exchange of he influenced me, I influenced him, but I certainly brought him into my world of the things where I went that I took for granted. It was in New York, after all.
You know, one of the things I love about the way you describe this early relationship is you were such equals, such peers, as opposed to, you know, a lot of the stories about girlfriends of musicians, especially musicians who went on to become famous, as they were kind of living in the shadow of the great man or simply, you know, muse to the great artist. But it sounds like the two of you really had a relationship of equality at a time when that was less usual.
But that's the way it should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess I was too young and restless and curious to become anything else. You know, we were both young. That's what I try to emphasize. And it's usually a successful musician, whether male or female or anyone successful in whatever, they've already have acquired this fame and fortune. So their partners have to be part of that in some way, unless they're in another, it is equally fame. But it's difficult. Whereas we were both young and he was becoming famous, but he wasn't yet. So we were equal.
When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling on, but don't think twice, it's all right.
One of the slightly uncanny things about reading your memoir is every now and then there's a little phrase kind of tucked in that I think, wait, I know that from one of Dylan's songs. Are you quoting from him, or did he quote from you in his lyrics?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I did do that. I did that in a few, but some might have been completely unconscious. They were just phrases, you know? I know people have referenced the rooster crowing at the break of dawn, and that was conscious. I knew that because I was setting the scene of they were there on Thompson Street in the Village back then. there was a place where you could buy live poultry and pick out the chicken you wanted, and then they would slaughter it and cut it up as you wanted. So we used to stay up all night. You know, nights started early and ended early in the morning, and you would hear, if you're walking around in the village in those days, you would hear the roosters crowing.
There's some letters you got from him. You went off to Italy at one point, and mm-hmm. he wrote you some really lovely, very young, but lovely love letters. There's one I remember he wrote, you know, I wrote this song and you're in it, and then I wrote this other song and you're in it too. What were those songs?
Well, he was trying to get me to come home. So they were. And I was very confused about staying or coming home. It was as if I was discovering a life other than the smoky clubs of Greenwich Village and folk music, which was really oppressive. I wasn't a folk musician. It was a bit much after a while. I hadn't been to college, and this was kind of college for me. I was meeting all these people and discovering other poets and other music. And I was having a wonderful time, but the underlying thing was this pull to go back to the city and be with Bob.
Is Boots of Spanish Leather, is that about you?
Well, you know, that's about Spain. It's Spanish Boots of Spanish Leather. That's a perfect example of how something's translated into make art. You know, I was in Italy and I was away, right? So this song says Boots of Spanish Leather. It's a perfect example of fictionalizing something. He was writing a ballad.
So the facts are different, but the emotion, the feeling, well, that's written to you.
That's art.
No, there's nothing you can send me, my own true love. There's nothing I'm wishing to be owning. Just to carry yourself back to me unspoiled. I'm across that lonesome ocean.
You came home after 8 months in Italy on your own, and he'd written you these, you know, heartbroken letters full of how much he missed you. And then you came home and discovered he'd been singing about his heartbreak all over the village.
See, there you go.
Was that hard for you?
Yes. Isn't that just like a guy? But he did that. He was working through it, and it became, I think that's typical of him and maybe others also, that what's going on, how you get rid of it is by working on it, whether it's a painting, a play, a novel, or a piece of music.
Well, you write as though it felt to you as if every letter he'd written you had been performed in front of an audience. I mean, did you feel exposed?
Yes, terribly. It was an awful period because I came home and eager to see friends, and all of a sudden I realized all this torturous love affair had been very public, and I didn't like that. I understand it on reflection, but at the time I wasn't happy about that at all.
Listen to me, baby. There's something you must see. I wanna be with you, gal, if you wanna be with me. But if you got to go, it's alright. But if you got to go, go now, or else you got to stay all night.
Could we talk a bit about that iconic photo of the two of you? It's on the cover of your book, but it was the famous album cover for the Freewheelin' Bob Dylan. Dylan's in looks like a thin suede jacket. You're walking through snow. You've got nearly knee-high boots on, and you look kind of bundled up in a dark coat, and you're holding onto his arm and kind of snuggling in. You both look freezing. Was it cold?
Yes. It was very cold. It was really very cold, and he just wore a thin suede jacket. I mean, it's understandable. Your picture's being taken. You want to look good. But I thought that was ridiculous. It was very thin, and he had a thin shirt underneath.
There's a subtext, though, in the picture. It's a really lovely picture of a young couple in love. But, you know, the subtext is he's the freewheeling Bob Dylan. You're the anonymous girl on his arm. And you've been saying, you know, you'd been raised to be a woman of substance, not just a musician's chick. Was that one of the tensions that eventually split you up?
Yes, I think that was it. Well, it was the time. It wasn't just us. People would refer to me, oh, you're Bob's chick, and so-and-so is his old lady. If you were married, you were an old lady. And if you were the girlfriend, you were a chick. I mean, how silly is that? And it was pre-feminist times, and all I knew was that I couldn't stand it. Whenever anybody called me chick, I would be furious, but I had no words for it, but it made me angry. I would say, I am not a chick. Don't call me a chick. It was a resentment also that in those years, a girl couldn't go to the movies alone. It meant she was bait. She couldn't sit in a cafe by herself and write or draw or do what the men could do. It meant you were a woman alone and anybody could approach you. So I had all this anger, but not words for it yet.
Did other women begin to enter Bob Dylan's life, and was that part of what drew the two of you apart?
Part of it, yes. As the more famous he got, either people wanted to be my best friend or they wanted to get me out of the way, one way or the other. I mean, that's inevitable with fame. You get more and more people humming around you, and you know, he was surrounded by people. It was very hard for him also, in a way, to continue working because he began getting all this attention as somehow he had the word, you know? And that was hard because how do you keep working if you think of it? You know, each thing you do is looked upon as, oh, the Oracle is writing something. Oh, let's hear what he has to say. It's hard to continue.
So did you ever get angry about the groupies, the other women? Did you fight about it?
It's hard to remember. It was so long ago, no details like that. I mean, I just remember just getting less and less. I just didn't want this life anymore. I just saw it as it was all about music and it was all about folk music. And it really, I would just have to be standing around and waiting, you know? And that wasn't a life I wanted. I had many things I was interested in. And I realized, I just don't want to be sitting back and be some folk musician's chick. But when you're in love with somebody, you know, it was hard for us both, I think, to really separate. We really were young and in love, but our lives were really not working anymore together. You know what I mean? If you reflect on how hard it is when you're young.
Suze Rotolo is an artist in New York City. She talked with Ann Strainchamps about her memoir, A Freewheelin' Time.
I once held her in my arms. She said she would always stay.